I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome back to Radio Times.
Donald Trump, you're asking Americans to trust you with their future. Let me ask you, have you even read the United States Constitution? I will gladly lend you my copy.
Last week, Khazar Khan, whose son Humayun was killed in Iraq in 2004, called out Donald Trump at the DNC, saying Trump had never sacrificed anything or anyone for his country. Trump said he had been viciously attacked and questioned why Khan's wife, Ghazala, had not been allowed to talk, implying that her Muslim faith silenced her. She wrote in the Washington Post that her grief over the loss of her son was so painful it made it impossible for her to speak in public. Trump told ABC that he had made sacrifices by being a successful businessman to an incredulous George Stephanopoulos, who asked, "Those are sacrifices?" A number of Republicans have repudiated Trump's responses to these Gold Star parents, as did a number of veterans organizations. Trump supporters said Hillary Clinton bears responsibility for Humayun's death because she voted for the Iraq War and was using the Khan family as a political prop. We're going to talk about all of this today in this hour of Radio Times, beginning with Travis Tritton, Capitol Hill reporter for the Stars and Stripes. And Travis, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Nice to have you with us. What has been the response of some of these veterans organizations? I'm thinking of the VFW.
Right. The VFW came out yesterday saying that the Trump statements were out of bounds. And what you've seen is just kind of an across the board, I think, surprise and outrage from veterans. They're just not used to seeing a political attack like this on a Gold Star family.
And Senator John McCain, who actually had been criticized by Donald Trump a year ago at the very beginning of his campaign, basically saying, you know, I like prisoners of war who were not tortured. What did Senator McCain say yesterday? Or what did he, I guess he released a press release.
Right. McCain has a complicated relationship with Donald Trump. He has backed Trump, but they seem to differ on a lot of issues. And, of course, the history of Trump's comment about his time as a prisoner of war. McCain has, in the past few weeks, stayed out of the election, but he made an exception for this. He waded right into it and issued a very long kind of soul-searching statement about this, telling Trump that telling the public that Trump's comments don't represent the public Republican Party, and urging Trump to make a better example for the public.
In fact, he said, while our party has bestowed upon him the nomination, it is not accompanied by unfettered license to defame those who are the best amongst us. And I guess it is the fact that this young man died in 2004. Can you tell us something about Captain Khan?
Yeah, Captain Khan, he was killed by a suicide bomber in Iraq. What I've heard is that he left his soldiers to go toward this vehicle and protect them and protect some civilians. And it blew up and he was killed. And he was posthumously awarded the Bronze Star and also the Purple Heart. People are coming out now since this controversy has arisen, I think, to talk more about Captain Khan and about what he was like as a soldier. But I think that he was well respected.
In fact, there's a memorial page at Arlington Cemetery at their website. Arlington is where he is buried. Have you looked at that memorial page?
I haven't seen the memorial page, but I did see photos of his grave marker were circulating on social media, and also I've seen photos that his actual grave site has become kind of a shrine to this. Apparently, a lot of people are really connected to his story and to his sacrifice.
You wrote, this was before the Republican, I believe it was before the Republican convention. Donald Trump did speak to the VFW convention in North Carolina. This is before all of this happened. What was the response to him at that convention?
Right. It's very interesting. Clinton spoke, I believe it was on a Monday, and then the next day Donald Trump spoke to this VFW convention. VFW is one of the largest veterans groups in the United States. And from what I can tell, the reception was lukewarm for Clinton, and Trump received a pretty enthusiastic reception. What he was saying kind of resonated with these veterans, many of them older veterans. So it was very interesting to see yesterday the VFW coming out. And the VFW doesn't often wade into politics, but yesterday they came out with their statement, which was a rebuke, pretty strong rebuke of Trump and about what he had said about the Khan family.
And why did he get a standing ovation at the VFW convention in North Carolina?
Well, he had laid out his 10-point plan for overhauling the VA, which remains a very sore spot for many, many veterans, young and old veterans alike. And I think he hammered home those issues that remain, and that's a message that resonates with a lot of folks.
And the response from leadership, from Paul Ryan, from Mitch McConnell, you cover Capitol Hill for Stars and Stripes. What's been their response over the last couple of days?
Well, from leadership, they've had some difficulties with Trump, and there are definitely some differences there. But what you saw is both, Ryan in the House and McConnell in the Senate came out with statements backing the Khan family, saying, talking about their sacrifice and how it's important. They didn't mention Trump by name, but the purpose of the statements were pretty clear that we need to kind of honor these Gold Star families and avoid this type of criticism.
Are you surprised that this story has garnered so much attention?
I'm not. I'm not, frankly. I watched, Trump's the interviews and been following his statements. And this just really was just outside the normal range of political discourse. And I was probably as surprised as veterans were when they heard Trump kind of go on the political attack against the Khans. Typically, in these situations, what politicians on both sides of the aisle will do when they're criticized from a Gold Star family is they will recognize their sacrifice, recognize their right to speak out, and then kind of move on. And that's not what happened here at all.
Well, Travis Tritton, thanks for joining us on Radio Times, getting our conversation started.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Travis Tritton, a Capitol Hill reporter for Stars and Stripes. Well, we have one of those Gold Star families with us now. Celeste Zapala signed a letter from a group of Gold Star families demanding an apology from Donald Trump. She's a founding member of Gold Star Families Speak Out. Her son, Sergeant Sherwood Baker, was killed in an explosion in Baghdad as he searched for the weapons of mass destruction. Of course, they didn't exist. This was April 26, 2004, the same year that the Khan's son was killed. And Celeste has been a guest on Radio Times talking about her son, and we wanted to get her response on Radio Times today. And Celeste, nice to have you back with us on the show.
Thank you for having me, Morty. I appreciate it.
Why did you sign this letter?
Well, I had been speaking with some of the other Gold Star families who I'm in contact with, and we all had a mutual sense of rekindled rage and sadness and a desire to defend Mrs. Khan, especially. And so after some conversations on Saturday and early Sunday, we agreed on a letter as a way to as a group of people who are not necessarily affiliated with anything other than the fact that we have lost people in war. And we released the letter as a request for an apology and also to stand up for the Khans. I mean, they are in the middle of a firestorm, and we all sort of felt it was our duty to stand right there with them and uphold them.
I'm looking at your letter here, and basically what you all are saying is that your comments about the Khan family are essentially an attack on us or a comment on us, a kind of solidarity with this Khan family.
Yeah, it's. I think that everyone has noted that attacking Gold Star families is sort of an uncharted territory in the political world, a shocking uncharted territory. And so we all feel, I think even no matter what side of the political world we're on, I think we all feel a solidarity and a compassion for each other. And to see those people being attacked then becomes an attack against all of us. If their sacrifice can be cheapened the way it was by Mr. Trump trying to create an equivalency to his business success, as somehow that was his great sacrifice for the United States, how should we feel? You know, how should I tell myself that losing Scher has any level of equivalency to what he's talking about? And, you know, there's sacrifice implies pain and loss. It doesn't imply
work.
Golden towers in New York City. You know what I mean? There's a, you know, we all work hard. We all work hard. We all try to take care of our families. We all try to serve in communities. And so it doesn't. There's no equivalency. It's foolishness. And in a sense, it's like it's just to me so shocking that he would take that tact. Everyone has said so far, and I certainly agree, that when a Gold Star family has a right to say whatever is in their heart, they have the right to speak. They have more than earned it. And a wise person would just say thank you and move away from it.
So as you mentioned the fact that it was in particular Mrs. Khan that you felt the need to write this letter about a minute before our first break. Can you give us your reason why? Why in particular her?
When she came out, I was watching very closely. When she came out, I could see how she was trembling. I could see that she was full of anxiety and that she was trying really hard to hold back her emotions. I mean, that came across to me. And I felt such empathy for her. I thought, how difficult to be on that stage. And I noted how her husband at one point put his arm around her, and I thought they must really lean on each other for support and help. They just had that sense of them as being a beautifully strong and grieved couple. And so watching her, I wanted to stand up and hold her hand, you know? I wanted to just be with her in that moment of such intensity and such difficulty. So to hear the attack on her is just, I just thought it was obscene, to tell you the truth.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll talk to you just very briefly after the break, and we've got a couple of other guests who'll be joining us. That's Celeste Zapala. She signed a letter from a group of Gold Star families demanding an apology from Donald Trump for comments that he made about the Khan family, who spoke at the Democratic National Convention last week here in Philadelphia. You can join the conversation. We want to get your response, especially if you're a Republican, if you're a veteran. Phone number 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, talking with Celeste Zapala about comments that Donald Trump made about a family that spoke at the Democratic National Convention last week. She signed a letter from a group of Gold Star families demanding an apology from Donald Trump. And you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Donald Trump on Saturday said, while I feel deeply for the loss of his son, Mr. Khan, who has never met me, has no right to stand in front of millions of people and claim I have never read the Constitution, which is false, and say many other inaccurate things. Do you think you will get your apology from Donald Trump?
Oh, Marty, I doubt it. But you know what? I hope that Mr. Khan's original message doesn't get lost in this storm, because what he was saying is that the military is made up of people of all faiths, of all gender identities, of all colors, and immigration status. And I think that part of his message is so important, and that's the part where we could all agree upon. And if the purpose of leadership is to bring people together, it's to embrace the incredible inclusiveness and diversity within our country, which is its strength, and to say, perhaps, that what we want to do is try to bring an end to the wars. We want to try to find a way to peace. We want to honor the people who have been lost of all colors and faiths. And, you know, it's a fairly straightforward and very patriotic statement. And the fact that that Mr. Trump has sort of skewed it to be about him, this has now become a problem that he was criticized without responding to what Mr. Khan was actually saying and talking about how we all are protected under the Constitution. And that includes all of us, even people that Mr. Trump doesn't actually like very much or would wish to keep from immigrating here.
Let me play you a clip, and this is Catherine Byrne, mother of a service member of the U.S. Air Force, asking a question at a campaign rally for vice presidential nominee Mike Pence. And I believe this happened yesterday. Let's give it a listen. I'll give you a chance to respond, and then we're going to have to move on.
Okay.
Let's listen.
My name is Catherine, and I am a military mom. My son is currently serving in the U.S. Air Force.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
My question for you, Mr. Pence, is time and time again, Trump has disrespected our nation's armed forces and veterans, and his disrespect for Mr. Khan and his family is just an example of that. Will there ever be a point in time when you're able to look at Trump in the eye and tell him enough is enough?
It's okay.
Have a son in the military.
It's okay.
How do you tolerate his disrespect?
Well, I thank you for the question. It's all right. It's all right. Folks, that's what freedom looks like, and that's what freedom sounds like, okay? It is.
So that's really painful to listen to. What do you hear in that interchange?
I just was shocked, and again, I felt that woman was pretty brave to have gone up and stood there and asked that question. And it, what a terrible commentary on the political situation at the moment, that a woman whose son is in active duty is booed for asking a question and for challenging a candidate. You know, it borders on dangerous to me, Marty, that we're reaching this point of near violence when people raise their challenge to the Trump administration. And I thought Pence was, you know, it was a great little dance he did. But he couldn't answer the question of when can you say enough is enough.
Well, Celeste Paola, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. And as I always say to you, I'm so sorry for your loss.
Thank you, Marty. Greatly appreciate it.
No problem. Founding member of Gold Star Family Speak Out, and she did sign this letter, a group of Gold Star families demanding an apology from Donald Trump. Let me welcome Eric Bollert to our conversation. He's a senior fellow at Media Matters. And Eric, it's been a couple of years. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. What do you make of all the back and forth that began here in Philadelphia about a week ago, and it goes on today, the back and forth between the Khan family, now the Trump family, over these comments that came out of the DNC?
I think most people who follow politics or run campaigns on either side of the aisle are beyond gobsmacked. The idea that Trump, in his first week of his general election campaign, right? We had both conventions. That's kind of the unofficial starting gate. You're off to the races. And the first thing the Republican nominee for president would do would be to pick a fight with a Gold Star family. It's everyone is shocked, and I don't care if you're talking about Republican or Democrat. No matter where you are on the spectrum, if you follow politics, if you've been in campaigns, if you understand how national elections are won and lost in this country, people are just completely stunned by this almost self-implosion in the first week of the general election campaign. So it's amazing to watch. And, you know, and I think one of the problems for the Republicans, it was clear that, you know, Trump was going to run a very insular campaign. He was not going to allow any of, you know, veteran Republican people who have run campaigns, veteran Republican people who have handled crises in the past. All of them have been excluded from the process. And Trump is basically going to wing his way to the White House. That's his plan anyway. And in week one, we're seeing what happens when a narcissist tries to wing his way to the White House.
Well, let me play a clip, and this is something Media Matters has been covering, Roger Stone. He doesn't work directly with the campaign, but he has been known to be a friend and ally of Donald Trump for some time now. And this is Roger Stone appearing on WNYM's The John Gambling Show, and this happened yesterday.
If you look at Mr. Khan's background, he is an advocate for Sharia. Sharia law oppresses women, oppresses gays, kills Christians. This is a violent, oppressive ideology, which Mr. Khan very clearly shares. He is tied to the Muslim Brotherhood. He is tied to the same sect of the Muslim Brotherhood as Huma Abedin. I'm suggesting that he has an agenda.
Eric, who believes this stuff?
A very small sect, right? And so, I said everyone is shocked. And the caveat here is there are small pockets within the far, far right media that will do anything for Donald Trump. And for most of the conservative media, the Weekly Standard, the National Review, places like that, which in the past have been, you know, completely engaged in a Republican campaign and defending a Republican candidate. That part of the conservative media has completely disengaged, and this week they are so thankful they did that months ago. What's left are what I would sort of call the bottom feeders, like the Roger Stone and some other kind of previously unknown surrogates who have showed up on the cable news shows in the last couple of days. To continue to smear the Khan family. And, you know, the sad part is, you know, I just did a piece for Media Matters this morning. There's an unfortunate long history in the conservative movement and the conservative press of kind of waging war against ordinary, everyday Americans who happen to, usually in a time of crisis, appear as obstacles to Republican messaging. You know, I wrote about Michael Schiavo. I wrote about Sandra Fluke. I wrote about Robert Bergdahl, Bo Bergdahl's father. All of these people at times of kind of loss or trauma and things like that, the Trayvon Martin's family, they were immediately seized upon by portions of the conservative press as the enemy. And instead of showing any sort of sympathy or restraint, they were piled on. And so that's what we're seeing now with the Khan family. There is a portion of the far, far right media, particularly during a campaign season, all the guardrails are down. There are no rules. So you have people like Roger Stone going on, spreading lies about the Khan family. And Roger Stone in the last 24 hours is talking about this is the same guy who's saying if Donald Trump doesn't win, it's because the election is stolen and there will be blood in the streets in Washington. So that's the radical element we're dealing with.
Do they get too much attention? I mean, we just played a clip, but do they get too much attention?
I don't think so. I mean, I think they're seen as what they are. I don't think Roger Stone, you know, in a sad way, I guess he has been mainstream because we are talking about him. He's been around for decades, and he's mostly been seen as sort of a crackpot. So he has been mainstream only because he has become an integral part of the Republican nominee's campaign. You can't just ignore that. If Donald Trump wants to embrace people like Roger Stone, embrace people like Alex Jones, who make a living off, you know, tinfoil conspiracy theories, that's his choice. That's the Republican Party's choice. And then the rest of us kind of have to deal with it. But I don't think they've been mainstreamed in the sense that, you know, people take them, you know, seriously on the face of it, or people in the press don't understand what uncomfortable element they bring to the campaign.
Let me read a couple of comments here. An email from Carl. How can we have a commander-in-chief who calls American POWs like Senator McCain losers, basically saying, you know, I like my prisoners of war who haven't been tortured. An email from Stu. When Trump said he could shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue and it wouldn't hurt his chances, he was right. McConnell, Ryan, McCain, and their ilk still say they will vote for him. There is no last straw. What is wrong with his followers? I don't know if you can answer that, but some have since your media matters, some have criticized the mainstream media for giving Donald Trump too much time, too much attention,
yep.
Not the right hard-hitting questions.
I think we've seen, you know, the we've been doing this Trump thing, this Trump whatever you call it, for 13, 14 months. There have clearly been different chapters. I would say last summer, most of 2015, the press absolutely did give him too much time, too much attention, did not do the traditional vetting they did of a Republican or Democratic frontrunner for months and months. He was treated as a celebrity. We saw that New York Times report, you know, billions of dollars of free media, Media Matters documented how, you know, the TV shows just threw away their old rules and let Donald Trump call into even the Sunday morning shows, let alone the cable shows. I think that we've seen, recently we've seen a change. I think once Donald Trump became the presumptive nominee in May, I think that the press started to sharpen its focus. Since he became the actual nominee, I think, again, we've seen even more focus matched with the fact that Trump's behavior in the last 1 or 2 weeks has become even more unhinged. It's virtually impossible to treat him as a serious candidate or to treat him as a serious person. Conservatives will say, oh, the press is, you know, piling on Trump, they're being so unfair. If you look at the comments he's saying on a daily basis, it's not just the Khan family. It's about, you know, the debates. It's about Russia hacking emails. It's about NATO. It's about Russia, you know, and its foreign policy. Any one of those would have been a huge, huge campaign story. So I think the press is slowly but surely finally kind of getting the right tone. But I think, frankly, it's virtually impossible not to have that tone when we're dealing with a car wreck, the size and magnitude of what the Trump campaign has become.
Let me get some callers, and we've got, looks like Eric from Spring City, Pennsylvania, joining our conversation. And Eric, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, it's actually morning, but that's okay. Go ahead, Eric.
Absolutely. I'm a former U.S. Marine, and just wanted to call and provide my comments for the current situation.
Sure, go ahead.
Just wanted to say this to start off, that Captain Khan, from everything that I've read about him, seems like somebody that I would have loved to serve under. Seems like a great officer, put himself before his troops, and that's to be respected and commended and honored. However, the Khan family stepped on the stage of the DNC holding a constitution and criticized Donald Trump for kind of twisted his words, honestly, in my opinion, for banning Muslims. It's actually a temporary ban until there's a proper vetting process put in place. But then when there was a response, you know, there's outrage that this Gold Star family was criticized. And I feel like that was kind of put there on purpose, and Trump maybe took the bait and maybe could have said things differently. But I cannot respect the way that it was handled, that, that almost like Gold Star families can say whatever they want, but they're off limits.
Sure. No, Eric, that's an interesting comment. And I don't know, Eric, if you've Eric Bollard, whether you feel comfortable responding to that, the idea that the Gold Star families are people you cannot criticize.
You know, I think that's an interesting and a valid point. Everyone, no one should be off limits of criticism. I think the problem that two things Trump did is, you know, he immediately, within the first question on that ABC Sunday interview, he immediately zeroed in on the wife and said some, frankly, very derogatory, disrespectful things about her. He didn't sort of have a point-by-point response. And just politically, he just made a terrible mistake. Look, Hillary Clinton was asked, about the Republican convention. A mother of the son died in Benghazi, spoke at that convention, was very critical of Hillary Clinton. Some of those parents have been extremely critical of Hillary Clinton.
Didn't that mother say that basically called Hillary Clinton a murderer?
I think they have in the past. And Hillary Clinton was asked about that, and she said, you know, I have respect for them. I have their sympathy. I've tried to be honest, et cetera, et cetera. You know, just politically, you just don't rush into that with a family that has sacrificed, given the ultimate sacrifice. That's just not a debate you have in the campaign season. You don't attack them. You express your sympathy. You express your respect, and you move on. And Trump made a big mistake. I don't think anyone is saying that if you're a Gold Star family, you get to make, you know, wild and erroneous allegations about anyone and no one can say anything. There's constantly free speech. There's constantly debate. But Trump, A, shouldn't have gone there, and B, he went there in the wrong way.
We're almost out of time here, but is this a have you no shame moment? Have you no decency, sir, moment?
Who knows? You know, people thought last summer in August, when he mocked John McCain, as you mentioned, people thought that was going to be a shame moment. You know, I think politically, I think for the conservative media, there have been shame moments and there have been points where people have just jumped off. They have decoupled themselves from the Trump campaign. And I think I haven't seen a single conservative commentator who has regretted that. I haven't seen anyone who said, boy, I wish I was still on the Trump bandwagon. And I think that the days are becoming shorter in terms of how many more opportunities people are going to have to jump off. But the red flags are just everywhere on this.
Eric Bollard, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks.
He's senior fellow at Media Matters. Waiting in the wings, Peter Wehner. And he's a former speechwriter for President George Walker Bush, also senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. And he's got his opinions about Donald Trump. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Well, for the untold number of times this election cycle, critics of Donald Trump are asking, has he gone too far? Trump's response to Kazir Khan's speech at the DNC, the father of a Gold Star Muslim American soldier who died in Iraq, was killed in Iraq, has drawn the ire from Democrats and Republicans, from Senator John McCain, and from veterans groups. But many of Trump's supporters have defended his comments, saying that Hillary Clinton was responsible for sending Khan's son to battle because she supported the war and Clinton has been using the Khans as a political pawn. Well, joining us now is Peter Wehner, senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, served in the Reagan and George W. Bush administrations prior to becoming deputy director of speech writing for President George W. Bush, wrote a book called City of Man. He also writes commentary for The New York Times. And Peter Wehner, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's nice to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. Has Donald Trump gone too far?
Yeah, he's gone too far, but he's gone too far probably about 36 times since his campaign started. I think the question is whether this time it somehow penetrates the heart of the American people in the way the others have not, and that this really begins to blow up in his face, because he's gone into a territory that, you know, no one else has ever gone. And this is morally indefensible and politically insane for him to go after a Gold Star parent family like he is. I think the important thing to understand is he is not a normal person. He has a personality disorder. I think it's probably a combination of narcissistic personality disorder and sociopathy. He has no empathy. He has no ability to control himself. Everybody around him, including his family, is saying, don't go there. You can't do this. You can't go after the grieving mother of a fallen war hero, and he can't resist it. And the fact that he can't resist it gives you an insight into his temperament and his personality, and that alone is disqualifying. You don't have to go any further than that when it comes to be to be president. So this particular incident, and it's not just one incident, it's one incident of untold number of incidents.
Well, let me ask you about an incident that happened early on in his campaign last summer when he talked about John McCain. I like prisoners who were not captured. Why was that not a disqualifier? I've been saying this for a year now. I do not understand why someone could say that and not be disqualified to run for president.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I agreed with you. And frankly, if you go back and read the contemporaneous media accounts, there were a lot of people who were saying it. That,
right.
They were saying, look, when you go after a former POW like McCain and do what you did, that would be disqualifying, and it wasn't. And then he went and mocked a reporter with a physical disability, and that wasn't. And then he likened Ben Carson to a child molester, and that wasn't. And then he made jokes about Megyn Kelly, about menstruation jokes, and referred to as a bimbo, and that wasn't. And then he retweeted these unflattering pictures of Heidi Cruz, and that wasn't. And he refers to women as fat pigs and dogs and slobs, and that isn't. That tells you something is amiss in this country, that those kind of things don't tell somebody. And so I think part of what it is, frankly, is that this is a mood of tremendous anger and frustration with a lot of Americans. Tremendous lack of trust in politicians and a feeling that political correctness has stifled what people can say, and they view Trump as an antidote to political correctness. I think that's insanity. They can't distinguish between political correctness and cruelty and crudeness and rudeness, but I think that's part of what explains it. We're in a period that's very, very unusual in American politics.
You forgot to mention that he seemed to indicate that Ted Cruz's dad might have had something to do with the Kennedy assassination, just to sort of add to that list there. Let me play something. This is Kazir Khan. He's on MSNBC's The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell. This was on Friday, and he speaks directly to House Speaker Paul Ryan and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Let's give it a listen.
To both of these leaders, this is the time, there comes a time in the history of a nation where ethical, moral stand has to be taken, regardless of the political cost. The only reason they're not repudiating this, his behavior, his threat to our democracy, our decency, our foundation, is just because of political consequences.
Peter Wehner, both Ryan and McConnell criticized, they didn't name him, but they criticized what Donald Trump said, but they did not say they would not support him. Does he have your party, the Republican Party, over a barrel?
Yeah, I mean, there's no question that Trump has done tremendous damage to the party, and I think the party, at least lawmakers in the party, have made the wrong decision, which is to support Trump. Even when he says these things. Now, it is true that there are people, particularly Ryan, who has gone out of his way on repeated occasions to criticize Trump directly, often directly, sometimes indirectly, and to say that he doesn't speak for the party, the spirit of the party. But the reality is that he's endorsed Trump, and he's sticking with that endorsement. I disagree with that, and I know Paul. I used to work with him. He's a close friend, and he knows my views on this. I will say that for some people like Ryan, and I think this is true for McConnell too, I think what their calculation is that they want to try and prevent a bloodbath below the presidential level. That is, that they believe that if he didn't endorse Trump, that would create such problems with the base, and many of whom are supporters of Trump, that would depress the turnout, and that Democrats would win the Senate and the House, and that would mean if Hillary Clinton is president, her agenda would go through unchecked. And that, to be fair, isn't just a shallow political calculation. Ryan is a conservative, and he believes that conservatism is better for the common good than liberalism. And so he's trying to make his way through and thinking, how can we check the worst outcome in November? As I said, I have a difference of opinion. I think that what Trump has said and done, that he's so beyond the normal parameters of American politics, that no Republican should endorse him, and that would, I think, free him up much more and others to criticize him. Beyond that, I think it's short-sighted, because I think you have to look beyond this election. I think the kind of damage that Trump is doing to the Republican Party could be a generational damage. And I think it's going to be very, very hard to wipe out the stain of Donald Trump when this thing finally plays out. And I think having endorsed him is just going to be very, very problematic. But Ryan is a person of good conscience. He's struggling with this, as a lot of Republicans are. That's what happens when the Republican primary voters gave the nomination to Donald Trump. Ultimately, they are the people responsible for it, because that's the man they chose.
Let me read a Facebook comment from Ivan. I think we should take a step back from the battle of rhetoric and look at the underlying issue. Neither Trump or the Khan family are under attack. These are just careless words back and forth. Is this a tempest in a teapot or something more serious than that, Peter?
No, it's more serious, because, as I said, it's not just the words, it's what do the words reveal. I mean, look, he was mocking a grieving mother of a war hero. Now, what would lead a person to do that, particularly a person who's running for president? Even if he felt that, doesn't he have the self-control, self-control in the name of self-interest to say, let's not go there, let's not escalate this battle? Couldn't he have been gracious? Couldn't he understand the searing pain that they're going through, like George W. Bush did with Cindy Sheehan when she attacked him in much harsher terms than the Khans have attacked Donald Trump, and said, I understand the pain, and they have a right to express themselves? He couldn't do that.
Do you think he's incapable of doing that?
Whether he's capable or not, it's a complicated question. Of course, he's in one sense capable of doing it, but he never does it. And the fact that he never does it is an indication of a personality disorder. And that's the kind of thing, when you make a judgment to be president of the United States, the most powerful office in the world, and you just cannot have a man who is suffering, who is that injured emotionally and psychologically in that kind of position. Set aside all the other things, and these criticisms I've made of Trump since he's gotten into the race back last summer, the staggering ignorance, you know, the cruelty, the vindictiveness, the conspiracy theories that you'd mentioned. There are many others that he talked about as well. The fact that he's a chronic liar, the fraud and Trump University, on and on and on it goes. So this is a very, very toxic, malicious package. But the Republican Party is stuck with him. And what you're seeing play out is this, you know, very, very unfortunate scene if you're a Republican, because the party that you believed in and cared about and fought for is being ruined by Trump. But this is self-ruin, because, as I say, the Republican primary voters are the ones that put him where he is.
Let me get John from Egg Harbor Township to join us. John, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. I just wanted to say that Trump has no business running for the president of this country. The commander-in-chief, he's a bigot. He has no business talking to a mother, talking about a mother like that, who lost her son to this country.
Well, you know what, John? I'm going to jump in here only because your radio is up. We're getting a delay, we're going to pull you down. But I appreciate the call to Radio Times. A veteran, he's offended by Trump. But Peter, I mean, he has the right to run for president, does he not?
Sure. No, I mean, he does have a right, and he did. And he not only has a right to run, but he won the nomination of one of the two major American political parties. So sure, he has the right. But I think what John was getting at is that he didn't deserve to win, and there's nothing in his background and his temperament and his achievements that would lead one to think that a person like that certainly shouldn't be president, let alone be the nominee of the party. And I agree with him on that. But it does give you an indication of what disorienting and disquieting times and swirling political times these are, that Trump would have been able to achieve this. It is stunning in its own way that someone with Donald Trump's profile would win the nomination. I don't think we've ever seen anything quite like it.
But what does that say about his voters then? They must agree with, if not all, a lot of what he says.
Yeah, I don't think it says very many good things about his voters at all. I mean, I know a lot of them, friends of mine, are Trump supporters. I think it's a complicated mix, and one has to be careful about drawing too sweeping of conclusions. I think some people, but I think relatively small percentage, are drawn to him because of his racist and nativist sentiments. But here's what I will also say, which is everybody who is a supporter of Trump's, who voted for him or now supports him, is willing to tolerate the nativism and the racism. And that's a terrible indictment to say. But I think on top of all of that, from what I can tell from the data, from the focus groups, from conversations with people, it's a combination of things. Some of it is a tremendous frustration with blue-collar workers in particular, that they've been left behind in the modern economy and the modern culture. Some of it is huge amount of disdain and contempt for the political class, which is why they view Trump as an outsider, the belief that things couldn't be better, the sense that a lot of people see Trump and they see strength and toughness. I don't. I see a bully and a self-indulgent bully. But when Trump speaks, I think a lot of them hear a person who they believe is speaking up for them. So I think that there are a lot of factors that are going into for the Trump phenomenon. But look, the bottom line is he is who he is, and it's no surprise who he is. He has run this way for the entire 12 months. This is not as if he ran one way and then people woke up and it was like, wow, we had no idea he was like this. I mean, we ran through some of the things he's done. We could spend 2 hours going through, you know, everything from his stunning ignorance to the cruelty. So he has run this way in neon lights, and people have known what they've gotten, and they've tolerated it or they've embraced it. And that, I think, is an indictment of much of the Republican Party. I'm sorry to say I'm a lifelong Republican and worked in the last three Republican administrations, but this is a low moment, an unfortunate moment, in some ways an ugly moment for the GOP.
A couple of minutes before we have to say goodbye, I mean, it sounds like you want Donald Trump to lose the election in November, but he said yesterday that the election is rigged or could be rigged, implying that if he loses, somehow it was not that people were either out to get him or that the system was determined not to let him be president. How dangerous do you think that is?
Well, it's an indication of something deep about him, right? He's a person who has these conspiracy fantasies and conspiracy theories that he's been peddling for a long time now, and this is just another example. I think he's setting the stage for his loss by saying it wasn't his fault. Nothing is ever his fault. That's what you have to begin with when I think in understanding the psychological profile of Donald Trump. And he's incapable of apologizing. He doesn't ever think he's done anything wrong. He thinks he said the other day that he's run a flawless campaign, and I think he probably thinks he has. I don't think it's dangerous, because if he loses, he loses. He's not going to have the power. I do worry because some of his supporters get so jacked up and are so caught up in this cult of personality that if he pushes these buttons and says, you know, that this was a rigged election, you know, that could be dangerous, because one doesn't know what his supporters, angry and upset at his loss, might do. But if he loses, he's not going to be sitting in the Oval Office, and I think that's the main, the main task. But look, you're right. You mentioned the Rafael Cruz implicating JFK assassination. He said the other week that Vince Foster was murdered by the Clintons. Remember what gave rise to Trump as a political figure. He pushed the theory that President Obama was a Muslim, not a natural-born American citizen. So these conspiracy theories are part of who he is, and as he does poor and loses, we're going to hear more and more of that.
Peter Wehner, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, the fourth of four guests in this hour of Radio Times. Madison Poulter, our intern this summer. Nick Kowalski helping us out today. Kevin Griffin, our engineer. Radio Times is produced by Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, John Ahrens, and Liz Fiedler. I'm Marty Moscowain. Thank you so much for joining us.